Blog Talk Radio.
Fort Worth Police Operator, M873, what's the address?
I'm calling about my neighbor.
Okay, what's the address?
1203 East Allen Avenue.
Okay, 1203 East Allen Avenue, what's going on there?
Well, the front doors have been open since 10 o'clock, and I haven't seen anybody moving around. It's not normal for them to have both of the doors open this time of night.
Okay. You know if anyone is inside?
No, I'm not sure. Both of the calls are there.
Okay. Bear with me. And they're in the driveway?
Both the cars in the driveway, yes.
Okay. Can you give me a description, like a color of the vehicles?
Well, one's white and one's dark blue.
The white one is a sedan or a SUV? Or pickup?
They're both sedans.
Okay. And what's your name?
James Smith.
And what's your telephone number?
Ma'am. Hello?
Hey, what's seven?
I'm going to put you on mute, okay? But I'll be listening. All right.
Gotcha. And are they usually home at this time?
I'm at home.
They're usually home, but they never had both of the front doors open.
Okay.
With the lights on, like I can see straight through the house. Well, my sister woke me up. She stays across the street from them. I live on the opposite side of my sister.
Wow, okay. And the address that you gave me, 1203, that's their address, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll have an officer come by. They're already being dispatched now, okay?
Okay, appreciate it. I mean, it's not normal for them to have both the doors open this late that long.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Hey, Kay, what did he say? I'm sorry.
Good evening, Mr. Allison.
Good evening.
The non-emergency call that Mr. Smith made the night that Louisiana Jefferson was killed. Okay?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Could you repeat it?
Okay. That was the non-emergency call that Mr. James made the night of Tatiana Jefferson
got
there.
Killed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's what that was.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're discussing the fact that the Aaron Dean trial has finally begun. It is exactly 1,133 days since the murder of Tatiana Jefferson over 3 years ago. That said, the defense team has attempted to muzzle the entire city in a way that has never happened before, all because they want to move the trial to a Parker County type of community full of law enforcement and members of law enforcement families. But how unfair would that be for all the others who have gone on trial before him that did not get any special treatment? That's what we're talking about tonight, y'all. The trial of Aaron Dean has finally begun. That said, let's talk Fort Worth. All right, y'all just heard Pastor Elsie Chris. He did not understand. I did not do our regular routine tonight, and we played instead the non-emergency call that was made by Mr. James. So, again, it wasn't a 911 call made to the Fort Worth Police Department the night that Tatiana Jefferson was killed. In fact, that was a non-emergency number that was dialed. Mr. James was very clear to state what he stated, and it never said that the robbery was in progress or a crime was in progress. It just stated that he was concerned for his neighbor. And some kind of way, things got turned upside down, and Tatiana Jefferson was killed shortly after Aaron Dean and his unnamed partner arrived on the scene that night. So that's what we're talking about tonight. We saw Reggie Ruffin on the board. We're going to open his phone line. Good evening, Reggie. How are you?
What's up, Carrie?
Hi. How are you?
Another Friday night in paradise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, we're seeing the trial begin, and as I mentioned in the intro, what I don't like is feeling like the whole city is being put in a chokehold or being muzzled, not to mention the name Aaron Dean, the fact that he murdered Tatiana Jefferson, or any of the details surrounding the case, basically because they're saying that he cannot get a fair trial. However, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, Mike Brown, I mean, you name it, Amber Geiger, you know, those were all trials that, you know, involved the killing of black people, or I shouldn't say just black people, but officer-involved shootings where people died. In those cases, people of color. So Botham John died, Eric Garner died, Mike Brown died, you name it. I mean, and nobody has had a situation in which the entire city gets put on lockdown and told not to talk about it, or the case would be changed out of the city. So does anybody see that there's a problem with that other than me?
Well,
Pastor Chris,
go ahead. In a lot of ways, there is a lot of disingenuousness involved in this, because everybody got jerked around on this whole thing. They was always trying to figure out what was the best angle to try to approach this. And now they're at a point where there's no angle at all. And in all fairness, yeah, there's a whole lot of other people who died under similar circumstances, not even worse. But then you got to look at it from this standpoint. What would have happened if Tatiana Jefferson had killed Aaron Dean? The man was in her backyard. She didn't know there was a cop. You think they'd have gave her this much time? I doubt it. They'd have been crucifying her. And, you know, the other thing, like what Chief Krause had said earlier, he said, had someone been in his backyard, he would have had his gun. And I guess that's part of the disparaging comments that they're claiming public officials was making about Aaron Dean, as if they was incriminating him. He incriminated himself with his sloppy tactics of going in someone's backyard that late at night, when he should have just knocked on the door and just said, Fort Worth Police, is anyone here?
Wow. Okay. So, and I agree. And so, again, police protocol, you know, was you know, not even followed, you know. And so there was a lot that should have happened that didn't happen. In fact, Attorney Leon Reed is on the line. Attorney Leon Reed, tell us about the protocol that was missed on this particular case, in this particular police call.
Well, the general orders, and I actually encourage people to look them up, read them, and know them, are actually on the Fort Worth Police Department's website. And if you just Google Fort Worth Police Department general orders, not only will you see the general orders there available for download, but you will also see several of the past racial profiling reports, which are all, in my opinion, detrimental to the police department, because they show time and time again without fail since their inception that African Americans and other people of color are disproportionately stopped. But you'll also see the use of force report there. And in this past year, the most recent use of force report, African Americans had more uses of force directed at us than any other segment of the population, including whites, even though whites outnumber us. We actually had the highest number of uses of force conveyed against us. But the general orders that are there, specifically, I can't speak to the specific ones right off the top of my head, but common sense would have said on a welfare check to just go and at least look in the front door, look in the door that's open, see if you can see something, or and have people stand strategically if you think something, you know, maybe a foot. Hey, dude, go stand, you know, back there. I'm going to go knock on the door. You understand? But,
right.
And that's just, and you don't have to be trained to do that. You just have to have common sense. And so I think in that instance, yeah, I remember seeing the recruiting video, I believe, where he said he wanted to join the police department for adventure. Well, that adventurous spirit is what led him to go creeping around somebody's backyard, not being familiar with the community in which he was serving, and the local population there led him to creeping around in somebody's backyard instead of going to knock on a door. And that's basically based off stereotypes and a disconnect between the department and the public.
But the problem I have with creeping around the backyard is when you're creeping around and knocking around things in people's backyard in the middle of the night, they typically do come to the window to see what's going on in their backyard. And seeing that it was a predominantly black neighborhood, what did he expect to see but a black person appear at the window? And so I don't understand what the perceived threat was when he saw a black woman appear to, you know, at the window. Where was the threat?
She did what anyone else would have done. She was justified in her response, even if she actually had a gun. Even if she had a gun, she was justified in doing so. Somebody's creeping around her backyard unidentified. She's a lone woman with a small child. And, yeah, so she was justified in having her weapon. And in my opinion, had she shot, she would have been justified because under Texas law, at night, you can use deadly force to protect property. And so given the fact that this was at night, he was creeping around her backyard, if she believed someone was stealing her property, the law gives her justification to use deadly force. And so it's this all is going to come down to, at the end of the day, whether or not a jury believes his conduct was reasonable. And that's going to be the linchpin. Were his actions reasonable? If so, then they can acquit him. If not, then he will be found guilty of murder.
But see, you know what? The problem I have with this whole thing is, first of all, for anybody that does not know, we're in Texas, and this is a stand-your-ground state, which is what Leon was just referring to. But that said, whether or not she had the gun or didn't have the gun has not, to me, been properly established, because they allege that the little boy said that the night that they took him in for questioning. But again, Zion was a minor. I mean, I don't remember what his age was, but I think he's 7, 8, and he's just
eight.
Been traumatized from seeing his – how old was he?
He was 8, so that makes him 11 now.
Okay, 8. Okay, so he's 8 years old. He just saw his aunt killed in front of him. So how credible is anything that he recanted immediately after that? You know what I'm saying? He's just been traumatized. So they allege that that Zion said – okay, somebody's making some noise in their background. Okay, if y'all can hear that. So they said Zion said she had a gun. But Aaron Dean took the shot. For what reason? If Aaron Dean did not see the gun – And it's only in the police report that Zion said she had a gun, then why did he shoot her? Because she appeared at the window of her own house? When somebody's poking around the backyard that's not supposed to be there? So I think, to me, that's the biggest piece of this whole trial. I mean, if you're going around the South Side in the middle of the night, going in people's backyards, and just the mere fact of them coming to the window scares you to the point that you shoot and kill them, what does that really say?
You could be on any side of town and have that type of reaction. So that's not going to weigh that much heavy on that end. But I think one thing I'm glad Leon's on here is the fact that one of the things they're going to be looking into in this case is the intent of him killing her. And because that's going to play heavily on what the jury decides, whether or not they decide it's going to be he's going to be convicted of murder or of some lesser charge. But if they haven't given them the option of a lesser charge, they're going to end up and find them not guilty, which is something that they could do, which is one of the things that I'm afraid is going to happen.
Well, when it comes down to, first of all, any intentional killing under Texas law starts off as a murder. If you intentionally kill someone, right off the bat, you're sitting on a murder charge unless you meet one of the exceptions, self-defense, protection of property, self-defense of others when it would be applicable to yourself, and so on. And so anytime a police officer discharges a weapon, as we have complained about for years, it is still the standard practice. If you discharge that weapon, you are shooting to kill. And so I have zero doubt in my mind that when he pulled that trigger, he intended to kill her, just like Amber Guyer did when she shot Botham Jean. When she shot, the intention was to kill. And so I do not believe that given the department's standards for discharging of a weapon, that he can turn around and rely on, I wasn't trying to kill her. Therefore, this charge should be reduced to a manslaughter, which is an unintentional killing. I believe he absolutely intended to kill her. Otherwise, he should not have discharged his weapon under departmental policy. I believe that the defense is really going to point the finger at the department. And the way that they've been attacking the city, the mayor, then Chief Krause, for leaving him out there like that, they're going to try to say that, look, they may use the same standards and reports that we complain about when it comes to racial profiling and how they do us. Hey, this is what he was trained to do. This is how he was trained to respond. This is what they told him about those communities while he was a cop in the department. They told him to be extra careful on that side of town. They told him to have a heightened sense of awareness. And when he did exactly what they told him to do, they left him high and dry. You understand? So at the end of the day, just like in the trial of Guyer, the jury had one thing to determine, whether or not her position of I mistakenly took his apartment for my own, therefore when I opened what I thought was my door and saw what I thought was a robber, I shot him, whether or not that was reasonable. And the jury in that case said no. He had a big red mat on there. You were on a totally different floor. Da-da-da-da-da. We find your actions unreasonable because there were too many clues that should have clued you in. And in this case, the question is going to be whether or not him bypassing an open door, going into the backyard with his flashlight, not announcing himself, so on and so, and then within 1 second of saying, show me your hands, and really not giving her an opportunity to do so, even though he did not announce himself as a cop, whether or not all of that is reasonable. In my mind, based on only the evidence that we've gotten from the public, because that's all we have, we don't know what each side has that they're going to present at trial. But in my mind at this point, no, his actions were not reasonable. But at the end of the day, that's where this case is going to, that's where the rubber's going to meet the road.
Well, let me say this. When the mayor recently said in a council meeting that while she was on the campaign trail, she was very candid about the fact that she believed that if a Tatiana Jefferson had lived in her neighborhood, this whole thing would never have happened, that she would still be alive. That said, how unsafe is that supposed to make, or how safe is that supposed to make the rest of us feel, knowing that because we don't live in the mayor's neighborhood, that we're more likely to be killed like a Tatiana Jefferson was because of where we live?
That is a pretty reckless presumption that she made, and I thought that I was she was painting the race car with extra strokes on the brush and the roller.
But it was the truth.
But at the end of the day, sometimes some things don't need to be said out loud. That was one of those things. Because it goes back to the fact of you're weighing a whole lot of options and a whole lot of things that we'll never get to know because she didn't live in their neighborhood. It didn't happen there. We don't know if a different cop had to handle things differently. So those are just some basic conclusions based upon what we don't have.
No, but what we're not talking about is another cop. What we're talking about is this particular situation, which is what she was referring to. And literally what she was saying is it had Aaron Dean answered the call on her side of town that it would not have happened. Is that not what you understood?
We'll never know.
What was odd is that she verbalized it, but she told the truth in that that shows the difference between, I said this recently, white people's perceptions of policing are different than black folks' realities of policing. And she was right. In her neighborhood, that would not have happened because Aaron Dean would have went to the door. He wouldn't have been looking for adventure. He wouldn't have had all of the preconceived stereotypes about that community, which led him to go pooping around, snooping and pooping around the backyard. In her community, he would have came and knocked on the door because he wouldn't have perceived that level of threat. So the mayor, whether she realized it or not, really slighted the police department. Because in saying that, you're saying that you are admitting that the police department treats black folk and people of color's communities differently.
Right. But we don't need an oversight citizens review board. But anyway.
No,
that still baffles my mind to this day.
No, we don't need one
for
this one, that's for sure.
We put a committee together so that the committee could come up with recommendations, but we decided to disregard the committee recommendation. Hmm. That's just mind-boggling. And it further goes to show, in my opinion, that there's a systemic, I don't want to say plan, but there is systemic injustices conveyed upon people of color in the city of Fort Worth. And this is not new data. This is real, tangible data with the city of Fort Worth logo on it. And you continue to convey the same practices to the point that an innocent woman was killed because of your systemic practices of racism in people of color communities. Period.
Well, let me put this on the table. If a Tatiana Jefferson was someone who has never been involved in criminal activity, was not in the middle of committing a crime at the time that this occurred. She was in her own home, minding her own business, in college, trying to go to med school. Basically, my point is, she was doing everything right that you would expect a person who's, basically going to be an upstanding member of our community. That said, if police can kill someone who is guilty of doing absolutely nothing and get off, then nobody's safe. That's just how nobody's.
You like look at Bolton John. He was just at his house eating ice cream when he got gunned down. And Amber Geiger should be doing more time for that. What she got was a slap on the wrist.
But she is
Trayvon Martin was just eating Skittles and drinking a tea.
Yeah.
Oh,
We have Tamir playing in a park as a kid with a toy gun. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing. Yeah. You understand? So, yeah, we can start running down the list of black folk who were just doing what they were supposed to be doing and ended up getting killed by the police. That is our reality of policing. But to be down in the council meeting on election night when they were voting down the citizens review board, I've been on a ride along in Como. You said a ride along in Como. That's one time. Well, I've spent like some 14,000 days in Como. You understand? If you ride along with a cop, what do you think the odds are that he's going to do something out of pocket? They were really just talking like, hey, when I was there, I did a ride along in Como and everything went great. It was swell. You know, it's like, no. You know, you rode through one night in Holland, you know, the West Side. You know, it's like, you know, and but that was just that type of mentality is really what undermines minorities, you know, people of color's confidence in the police department. You're just being disingenuous. You're ignoring what I'm telling you, in any kind of relationship. When someone is hurting in that relationship, the first thing you have to do is acknowledge that other person's pain. Mm-hmm. If I've harmed Carrie, I can't just say, hey, get over it, stop all that crying. I got to say, baby, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I messed up.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to make things right? But if you never get to that, even if it's business, hey, I did something I wasn't supposed to do. Now I have to pay you. Now I have to do this or do to make it right. Otherwise, you're not going to have a trusting business relationship. In any kind of meaningful relationship, if one party is harmed, you must acknowledge the harm in order to move forward, or you're just simply not.
Well, let me ask this. How likely is it that Aaron Dean will testify?
I would say slim to none. Slim is already on the couch eating chips with his remote control in his hand. Any testimony about the training and so forth, they will get from favorable police officers who were in his training class. This is what they told us. This is what they taught us and so on. And so if I'm the defense attorney, I've already check the public records to see if any calls came from Tatiana's house or any other houses in that immediate area. You know, if there is a quote unquote known drug house, three houses up the street, you know, so something was this, you know, I'm looking at all of that to give him a reason to be on high alert. His training officer told him such and such and such and such. I was there when he said it. You understand? That's how you can get the jury to hear that this is what he was told to do without having him actually be up there to testify to it, because once he takes the stand, Dale and Ashley are going to go at him.
Okay, so if he never testified, we never know what his real mindset was when he went in that backyard. So we'll never know why he actually shot an unarmed person. So I'm trying to understand, like, how are we going to say he's innocent when we don't even know his story?
That's because he does not have to testify under the U.S. Constitution. the burden is on the state to prove every element alleged. You know, if somebody accuses you of doing something, you have the right to fold your arms and say, prove it. And you know, so as a defense attorney, he shouldn't have to testify. He shouldn't have to disprove. But should he want to, he has the right to. But when you do that, some people don't speak well. Some jurors are going to think that everything you say is self-serving and a lie anyway, you know. And so, and then you may get up there and say one thing wrong, use one word wrong, and now you just gave that other attorney, he gonna marinate on that one word and twist that screw all the way in, even though it was a poor choice of words at that time. You understand? So there's right. just a bunch of ways stuff can go wrong when someone testifies themselves, but if they want to get stuff in and get that goes to the culture of the department, you go out and you get some other cops who were his boys, who were friendly with him, who also had grief or beef with the department. They still might work there, but they're going to be protected because they're going to be protected by whistleblower laws. If you now start going after them, you know, now you're going to catch an official oppression or something. You understand? But you have to have direct witnesses as to how they were trained and what they were told in order to, you know, put him in the mindset of bypass the open door, don't knock on it, go creeping around in the backyard, you know.
Right.
So I just do not see him testifying. But if he testifies, I said like this, if he testifies, something went real wrong for the defense.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
Because
I can believe that.
At that point, you don't want to open up the floodgates and just have all other types of incriminalities coming in that could just bury him even deeper, not to mention can bury the police later on for years to come on other cases. Then they can start looking back on other cases. Well, they had done this and this. You know, it opens all these type of variables up.
Yeah.
Well, it
and
opens
so
him up
now,
for cross-examination, but it opens him up for cross-examination too, right?
Absolutely.
We're not just talking about cross-examination.
Dale and Ashley. Yeah, those are the prosecutors. Dale Smith and Ashley. I forgot Ashley's last name. But Dale and Ashley, if he gets up there and says something out of pocket, oh, they own it. You know, they already
right.
got they whole separate notebooks sitting to the side of questions to ask Aaron Dean.
Damn.
You understand?
Yo,
go ahead.
I was going to tell y'all that we're having problems again with people saying that they're not able to get through the phone line. This started happening last week. And now we're having that again. So we're going to call Mr. Gillis on the phone because he is not able to get through. But go ahead and finish, Attorney Liam. You were saying that they were not able to get through.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gillis, how are you? This is Benson Gillis, who was not able to get through.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. I'm doing pretty good at the time. Yes, I would call. I would try to speak on the internet adjusting a situation that, you know, I'm one of the, I wouldn't say a protester, but I'm one of the persons that on the night of the vigil that I turned it into just what it was. But, and, you know, like Mayor Betsy Price, she had came and I told her she couldn't speak unless she arrest him. And she said she was going to arrest him. And that was she went and did, right? And I'm looking in the medium because to arrest them, they had everything from the video that it despises that they had proper cause, you know. And but that she spoke on, you know, she spoke on. I guess she was trying to slightly say that he was guilty, you know what I'm saying? But that do not give them a reason to try to change venue. Because, I mean, where would a trial go? I mean, anywhere they go, I believe we would go. You know what I'm saying?
Whoa.
So I believe.
No, I just said, oh, because I'm not going to Parker County, but okay. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, I couldn't see them going to some little old town and want to get a little town tow up, because wherever they go, the public got a right to know where they're going, you know?
Yeah, and, but I doubt anybody would go out to Mineral Wells and do anything.
I know that. I'm just saying.
Well, it probably not be anyone with too many people from this city, but I believe some outsiders would, you know? Regardless, I mean... Yeah. I mean, regardless of the situation, you know, people's going to be here in Fort Worth. They're going to protest here. So, you know, the outcome of a verdict, you know, it's going to be what it is, you know. If there's no verdict, or whether, you know, whether the citizens not act with the verdict. So, I don't too much speak on this, ma'am.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish this.
Out.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, let me touch on I'm very sick trying to, you know, get across. But let me speak on this. I kind of bagged away from this case because I was dealing with two different sides of the family, and I had to go with, you know, who had rights that I father in the court decided, and the uncle over in Dallas, he had rights. And so he was giving me rights to do what I wanted to do, father, then, you know, getting together and mobilizing around, you know, trying to get this case to trial, you know. And but I was accused of the two sisters, you know, that I was paid by the uncle to, and that ain't what I'm about. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I got involved in the case because that's what I do, you know. And my organization is keeping the street, keeping it real. I deal with injustice, social justice, and community revitalization issues. So I myself been incarcerated in prison for 27 years because a police officer said I almost ran over him with a vehicle when he tried to kill me, you know, while I was just a traffic violator, you know. So, and I just want all the listeners to know, whoever listening in, that, I mean, where are they going to go? I wouldn't know a little town here in Texas or anywhere they really want a case like that, you know? If they want to risk, you know, some riot or whatever might take place, you know? But, and for the lawyers to change the venue, I mean, you know, this dead area, all the body of case law that you can read on a change of venue, it deals with some prejudice issues that, you know, maybe by the press or something like that, but in a situation of the day and time, that case law is no good because you got social media, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you got the, and so I'm wondering what are they thinking, you know, if they do move this trial, you know, I mean, at a judge is making this ruling, you know, what would he be thinking about if he did grant the motion change the venue, you know?
Well,
so he got to consider all that.
We're going to ask Attorney Reed to speak on that. But thank you, Mr. Vincent, for calling in tonight. Leon, can you speak on that?
Oh, Leon on the phone?
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Hayes.
Not Hayes. I'm the other Leon.
I ain't heard from you in a while. You know what this is, right?
This is not Leon Haley. This is Leon Reed.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay.
But here's the deal. As far as the change of venue goes, Judge Gallagher's intent, Tarrant County has 1 million-plus people.
Mm-hmm.
And so this jury is not going to come exclusively from Fort Worth, and it may have people on it who do not live in Fort Worth. We're, you know, mm-hmm. we're talking Arlington, half of Grand Prairie, Colleyville, Mansfield, Benbrook, Grapevine, all four corners, great part of Grapevine, all four corners of the county, and all we're looking for is 12 people. And so Judge Gallagher's position is, I'm going to wait and see if I can't find 12 people. If we can't, you know, so we're going to go forward with jury selection. And if at the end of the day we can't find 12 people out of 1 million, then we'll look at moving it. But they're going to be starting jury selection.
Let's break that down. When you say can't find 12 people, well, what are you looking for in the 12 people?
Well, that's what you pay a bunch of money to jury consultants for, because each side is going to be looking for a certain type of individual depending on how he or she wants to frame the case. And so I have no doubt that Judge Gill and Miles, you know, are looking based on the evidence that they have. If they got a whole bunch of technical stuff, they may want people with degrees or higher levels of education. If they want to make something so simple and so plain that Bubba will say, nah, hell no, then they ain't going to, you know, they'll look for, you know, people who don't have higher education degrees and things like that. They'll look for people with their name on their shirt, just regular old blue-collar folk. You understand? And and so
I like how you put that.
but one jury, you could present the same set of facts to one jury and the jury could convict, and the same set of facts to another jury, the jury could acquit. You know, so it ultimately is going to come down to, you know, at the end of the day, when all of the evidence is submitted, it's all going to be pointing at, was what he did reasonable? And if a jury says, if you would have been in my backyard, I would have had my gun too, and therefore you should, then he's going to get convicted. But just like with Amber, the punishment range on a first-degree felony is 5 to 99 or life. So as a defense attorney, when we're picking a jury has to be open to the entire punishment range. If a jury comes in there and says, on a murder, if I convict you of murder, there's no way on God's green earth that I'm giving you 5 years, congratulations, you are now struck from the jury because you're not available to the entire range of punishment.
Bing.
Similarly, if this is a kiddie rape case where you're 50 years old and you done raped a 3-year-old 4 times and the punishment range is 5 to 99 or life, and you say there's no way on God's green earth that if I find this person guilty of doing that, then I'm going to give them the minimum, well, you're not on the jury. Because you have to be able, there has to be some circumstance under which you would give that person the minimum, otherwise you're disqualified. And so therein, if he is convicted, they're going to come back and put all of this good stuff that he did, and he was just trying to help, and he's young, and don't throw him away. And that's how Amber ends up with 10 years for murder.
Mm.
So in theory, yeah. He could get 5 years. He could get probation.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is going to come down to, would the jury do that? And that's the good thing, I think, about being in red Tarrant County, you know, because folk are real funny about their gun rights and protecting my home, and she was in her home. If this happened to me, I wouldn't want somebody to get the minimum. No, she was where she was supposed to be doing what she was supposed to do. Quote, unquote, she's one of the good ones, you know. So that may be what leads the jury to actually give more time, you know. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to give him 40 years, you understand, you know.
Right.
But whatever time you get on a murder, you're going to have to do half of it. So if they give him, you know, so do I see him giving him 20 years? Ooh, that's going to, you know, just because you're still dealing with Tarrant County juries. And they're pro-police, but they're also pro-gun rights, and I don't want to wear no mask, and you know, the government needs to stay out of my business. So they're also, there's a level of anti-government there. But and I'm not, and kind of went up. But as far as change of venue, all they're looking for, supposed to be 12. If they can't find that 12, then that's where you come up. And the judge may turn around and say, give me 12 more. Or give me another panel. Because the judge may not stop with one panel. He may say, give me a second panel. We got 10
okay,
that
so
time.
Back
or maybe.
Jury.
Uh-huh.
So how many alternates are we talking about?
There may not be alternates. One, you got to get the jury first.
You got to get the jury in there
first. Usually, you got to get the jury. So juries are selected. The computer randomly puts together a panel of people who are presumably qualified. And so they may call 120 people for this trial. And they'll put them down in the grand jury room downstairs and number them and seat them, and they'll start going through them, and there'll be some people that each side will agree to strike. There'll be other people that they may not agree to strike, and then you have to present your argument to the judge, and the judge may say, yeah, that person has a conflict, either a witness, an interest, a bias. Usually you try to get people on biases, their relatives, something like that. And so if you don't get 12 out of that jury panel of 120, now they may reassert their motion to change venue, but the judge could turn around and say, look, we got 11 people out of that one. We may have better luck out of this, out of another panel. Let me try a second panel. And he may get a whole new group of 100, you know, people, and he may try to get one more out of that new group. You understand? Now you got 12.
Well, let me say this, Lynn. I do. And I do believe that there is a jury here in Tarrant County. I do not believe that you got to go outside of Tarrant County, spend some more taxpayer dollars over there when everything you need is right here in Tarrant County. I do believe that. I do believe they absolutely can find a jury here if they're looking for one. I believe that.
Nobody
Am
has
I right?
nobody to agree with you on that. Just whatever going to work for Aaron Dean. Those are the only people that are going to have a problem with it. The only people that are going to have a problem with who they choose for the jury is going to be Aaron Dean and his attorneys. Outside of that, nobody's going to question whether or not you can get a fair jury here in Tarrant County. The only reason why they're beefing about that right now is because they're trying to sway things to his favor.
That's what they're getting paid to do. They're earning their money.
Right. That's their job.
And they're not just looking at the trial, they're also looking at a possible appeal in case he does get convicted. They're getting their ducks in a row for the appeal as well.
For the appeal. That was the next thing I was going to go with.
We talked about on another show that they probably spent close to $500,000 on this trial. Do you still stand by that?
By the time all is said and done, the total cost between the taxpayers and what the Police Officers Association have forked over, yeah.
Dang.
Of that I have, yeah.
That's crazy money. I mean, I don't know where we're going with that. I mean, because
that's our taxpayer dollars at waste.
It is. I mean, he's gotten so much special treatment in terms of, first of all, as I said, we're 1,133 days since the murder of Tatiana Jefferson. That's over 3 years. This man has come up with every excuse to postpone trials, or his defense team has come up with every excuse, you know, 1 minute. You know, they're on, okay, somebody's got some noise, and you have to isolate that noise. Basically, they said that the attorneys are going on vacation. And then they say that the lead defense attorney is sick. And then they've come up with, we're going to recuse the judge. I mean, Leon, what other reasons? I mean, they've come up with everything. I mean, to postpone this trial to this point.
Maybe they're called the religious police.
Yeah, but they are doing these two, and I think I've said it on a previous show, Judge Gill and Miles are not lightweight. Judge Gill has written the Texas criminal law practice guide for the better part of two decades at least.
and Miles is the techie. I know them both. They're defense attorneys. And Judge Gill used to be a judge. I've had cases in front of him, not a trial, but different other things that I've had in his court when he was a judge. Then he became a prosecutor at the DA's office, and he was going to run at the time Sharon ran, but decided to go on his own. So they're not lightweight. And so when the POA paid them, the POA was going to get its money's worth. And
wow.
So that's what they're doing. So at the end of this trial, if Aaron Dean gets convicted, they're going to have some things that they're going to take up on appeal. And if the appeal sticks, then he got hit. He cannot say, I did not have a fair trial. He will have had a fair trial.
And that's the beautiful thing. So what, Reggie?
I said it'd be the best criminal justice system money can buy.
Yeah. But see, if it was Joe Blow who did this, first of all, there would be no special treatment. There would be no postponement, you know, for 3 years. There would be no, you know, my attorney is going on vacation or this, that, that. That just would not be happening. And we would not be trying to silence the entire community and put everybody under a gag order. Leon, when in history have they tried to put the whole city under a gag order?
Yeah, well, that's why they call it best criminal justice the money can buy. But, yeah, if that had been any of us, we already be fighting Goldmouth about our cornbread. You know, we already would be sent down to sent down south. So that goes without saying.
I just don't remember.
I've never heard of that happening.
Really?
You can't, I don't care how many articles are written in the Star-Telegram, you can't necessarily prove who actually took the time to read them. I don't care how many news episodes run on Channel 8, Channel 4, CBS, and NBC. You don't know whose household it hit or if it hit anybody that night that it ran or if they went there. And that's one of the big problems that – all, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you can't prove. If Councilman Nettle did go out and say something that maybe he shouldn't have, well, you can't prove who heard it. You understand?
Exactly.
Just because it was, you can't prove who read it. And, you know, it's just, so you're kind of getting into weird waters when you do stuff like that. And so that's why I don't think that the court is ultimately going to be very persuaded, you know, by that type of argument. I think
some
even today.
Go ahead.
Well, when they were asking the expert about hey, this and that and what have you seen? When they had the expert on, I think the expert was actually questioned on, where are you getting this information about who read what and who heard what? And, you know, oh, this is just general study. Okay, well, then what you're saying may not even be applicable to what's going on here in Tarrant County.
See, what I heard today was that allegedly some of the questions that was asked of Councilman Chris Nettles was, did you base your campaign on justice for Tatiana Jefferson? So I thought that was an odd question. They also asked, did you deliver the letter to the, you know, why did you deliver the letter to the judge with a camera crew? They also asked, are all of your social media followers within Tarrant County? Well, who has a following of just within a county? To me, that was just ridiculous.
Well,
no one
would know the answer to that. That's an impossible question to answer. And so your answer is good. You know, the obvious answer is I have no idea.
Yeah.
That is the only answer you can give. I have no idea. I have no idea. Just because somebody likes, I may have 20,000 folk who click like on my page. That don't mean that 100 of them Negroes hear what I say. Otherwise, they would have came out and voted when I told them to come out and vote.
Wow. No, that's right.
You understand? And so, so those kind of questions are, you know, they can, they have a purpose. That purpose is to plant seed sometimes. And, but when it comes down to the rubber meeting the road, it's like, okay, well, it doesn't matter how many followers he has. If he has 100,000 and he said it, that doesn't mean 100,000 heard it. And if all 100,000 heard it, that doesn't mean, you know, 99,000 of them could be from New York. Who knows?
That's what I thought that Chris Nettle should have been at least. I want to use the word coach, but he should have consulted with someone before testifying, because I've testified before in court and I had an excellent lawyer who explained to me the process of, you know, when you're asked a question. To, if you don't understand where the question is going, then you ask the attorney to repeat the question. And if after him repeating it several times, you still can't figure out where he's going, then you ask the attorney, can you rephrase the question? And you can keep playing that game all day until you figure out where he's going. And so I'm not sure why Chris Nettles didn't do that. I'm just saying, because some of those questions – I understood he said yes to everything. I thought some of these questions he probably should have gotten some more clarity on before answering.
Well, when you're up there on the stand and a lot of people are watching, sometimes, yeah, stuff can get away from you. But you would hope, and so this is also, as a city councilman, the city attorney's office would likely represent him on something that could end up costing the city money. If he acted in a capacity kind of as a private citizen, well, you know, then he may have his own side attorney as well. But when he delivered that letter, I believe he delivered that letter as Councilman Chris Nettles, and so the city attorney's office should have been the entity that coached him up, per se. And a lot of the city attorneys are trial lawyers. The city attorneys are mostly civil.
Oh, wow.
They're handling lawsuits. The prosecutors in the city attorney's office are doing tickets, not murders.
But you know what? If we're going to say that, with all due respect, Councilman Nettles, that we're going to hang this whole trial on Chris Nettles, then it's a sham going into it. I mean, really, because again, with all due respect, I don't think he has the popularity to sway a whole Tarrant County. I don't think he is even known in most of Tarrant County. So I think to imply that his popularity is so huge that he could sway a whole jury pool of over 1 million people, I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
The defense knows that already.
But on the same,
you know, they know all that. All they're doing, they're just posturing right now. Everything they're doing has served its purpose, stalling this inevitable as long as they possibly can. And until we just finally, when they finally start calling the first witness, we're not going to know how this thing going to turn out. And, you know, because, like, my two possibilities that can happen is if they have the trial here, it's going to get hung. They sent it out abroad. It's gonna be an acquittal under the favor of the police in this scenario. That could guarantee a whole lot of things. I mean, I remember when Kev Tate was talking about how the police just kind of went all crazy and everything on shooting and killing people after Officer Garrett Hall was murdered. And then after that, it was open season in the black community. So, I mean, but I talked about how Joel Fitzgerald put the sick'em call on him at Hull's memorial service. So he was sucking up to the crowd. You know, no matter how we try to paint this thing, color always is the final word on all this, whether it's the color of the skin of the victim or the offender or just the color of money. Color plays a role in everything that goes on in court.
Wow.
So There you have it. And my spin was for free.
I feel that.
When you look at changing the venue, who's to say that the people in Abilene and Amarillo and all, they have the internet too.
Yeah.
You don't know if they're watching more DFW news than they are watching Amarillo and Abilene news. So, you know, so who's to say, just you go out there, you may run into the same jury issues when you get there.
You understand.
So that's just, you know, so just we're living in a different era where, you know, changing the venue and folk didn't know about it. Yes, folk know about this. They know about it all over Texas and Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
This is national news. What makes you think somebody in Stephenville isn't going to have heard about what's going on? Of course they are. So why even bother to move it? You got the same chance of getting some folk, you know. Tarrant County is the reddest county. This is political data. It's like, you know, Tarrant County is redder than these other places. So you're subject to get to end up worse off. But, you know, again, this is a heavyweight fight. Just know that going in. Don't take anything for granted at the end of each day.
Isn't this the trial of the century here in Fort Worth?
For Fort Worth, it absolutely is, even though the department, it isn't the typical citizens versus the police.
Mm.
This isn't, you know, this is the city has walked away from Aaron Dean. The mayor,
right.
The police chief,
and
they fired him.
A police officer, that makes it hard.
And so, like I said, if I'm the defense attorney, I wouldn't be surprised if he pointed the finger at the department and used the same stats that, you know, but this is what they trained me to do. It's their fault that I did it. I did what they trained me to do. I did what he told me to do. Chief Noakes was at the academy or something when I was a recruit. I'm, you know, who knows? You understand? But I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the defensive strategy, because the department left him. And so the city is trying to distance themselves from the police department's actions in this situation. And so that's what's really the interesting thing about it. That's what makes it novel. Is the approach that the city has walked away from Aaron Dean, and they did it quick.
But he quit, or so they say.
Of course, he's going to be given the opportunity to resign.
They will say
but he was about to be fired.
Mm-hmm. Or so they
right.
say.
Right. Well, that's the semantics they're going to play. I mean, trust and believe. The fix is in, because they're just as much engineering how they're trying to save their face as well. See, Bessie Price still trying to get out of the doghouse after the way she clowned over Jackie Craig. She still, you know, she still got egg on her face for the way she made a fool out of herself in front of that open mic. So that's the reason why she's walking the way she's walking. And, I mean, everyone's taking a political position, and even Councilman Nettles to a certain degree, because everybody's got something on this case. And,
Bessie Price is not the mayor anymore.
Well, but guess what? Whether she was or wasn't, it was on her watch when it happened.
Hmm.
That still plays into what's going on now.
Karen, just asked, though, do you got any more callers sitting out there?
Remember,
we still having those problems.
The boards are messed up. And again, let me make the announcement, y'all, because I mean, I really don't know what to say as far as these phone lines are concerned. So if you are trying to get through, you can inbox me on Facebook and I can dial you. We had the same problem last week and we had to dial several people. So I don't know what's happening. I've got to check with Blog Talk Radio and figure this out. I'm not sure if it's your cell phone provider, because I don't have any problems when I dial in. Leon, you didn't have any problems, right?
Reggie didn't have
any problems. So,
no, I didn't have any either.
But okay. I had to call Pastor Chris. So, it, you know, I don't know if it's a luck of the draw of who your provider is. I doubt that all three of us are on the same provider, but something's going on, and I can't identify it right now. But we've had this for the last couple of weeks, and I don't know what the problem is. So if you would like to call in tonight and chime in on this topic, you can inbox me on Facebook, and I can dial you from the switchboard. Otherwise, I don't know how to fix this right now anyway.
It's in
so
my
that's
phone, people.
Is that what you're listening? Or
it's
or
the people with iPhones. If you got a Samsung, call in and get through. You'll be first in line.
And you know what? And I do have a Samsung, too. I don't know, y'all. I don't know. I mean, or they cover your provider, though. But because remember, T-Mobile decided that anytime you call it in, if you're on a conference call, they're going to charge you 1 cent a minute. And so somebody was saying the other week that they were trying to charge them a penny a minute to talk on my show, and they said they weren't going to pay me a day. They thought I was making the money. And FYI, y'all, I don't make money when you call into the show. So that's not it. So it's not me that's doing it. It's got to be your cell phone provider. So just FYI.
Yeah, that's
on
not
that.
Even $2. That's
but
not $2.
But no, but no, it's a penny a minute. No, no, well, it's a penny. Well, I don't know. So that's what they're doing. So, you know. FYI. So again, inbox me on Facebook and I can dial you from the switchboard. But my question is this, is there going to be any justice for Tatiana Jefferson criminally or civilly in this case? Because, you know, if it doesn't get through criminally, I don't think civilly is going to stand much of a chance either.
I think it's going to pay out civilly regardless. But the question is whether it's going to be civil. The question is, Well, I'm just saying. I think everybody has an idea that what Aaron Dean did was just grossly negligent. But at the end of the day, I mean, a civil trial doesn't carry as much burden of proof as a criminal.
But what happened to Jackie Craig? What they offered to Jackie Craig, I didn't think was fair. But you know, so in terms of Fort Worth paying out, they may pay out, but it may not necessarily match the crime.
Jackie Craig is still alive. God, thank you. But that's the way they're going to look at it as well. So
you agree with that, Leon?
Fort Worth is notorious for not cutting checks and fighting everything with qualified immunity. He was an officer acting. In his official capacity, but because of qualified immunity, Fort Worth will absolutely try to use that as a defense. However, in this case, they can basically be shamed into cutting a check, but they're not going to want to cut as big a check as a lot of people think, because they're going to sit back. Now, if he does get convicted, that could help, but that Fort Worth could turn around and say, well, he was obviously acting outside the scope of his duties as a police officer, therefore we are not liable. You understand? So
yep.
there are two ways to go with this, but basically the benefit to that family is the shame that this lady was killed in her house doing what she was supposed to do, and y'all don't think that her life was worth anything, a medical school student who, you know, who was doing everything. So there is going to be a check cut. And if I'm remembering correctly, when Mayor Moncrief was in office and he had the family that drowned at the water garden, you know, the city cut a big check, you know. So it's just certain things. And when you look up at Breonna Taylor's family, they got like a $25 million. I don't anticipate seeing that kind of check cut by the city of Fort Worth.
Nope.
I just don't see it coming from Fort Worth. Fort Worth fights everything. And you know, even when they're dead wrong, if you ask me, they should pay the family of David Colley. And if you don't remember who he was the young man who went from walking to a wheelchair in 30 seconds when Officer Hugo Barron rolled up on. I sent you that video on him, Carrie.
Yeah, right.
You know, when he was accused of pointing the gun or something, when all he had was a box cutter in his pocket that he used for work, and they were looking for somebody 6 foot with a fro, and he 5'5 with a fade. Mm-hmm. You understand? And so, but he ended up being paralyzed from the waist down and basically, you know, dying of depression after, you know, in a wheelchair. Yeah, pay them people. There are a lot of folk that I think the city of Fort Worth should have cut checks to. And it's mm-hmm. all a part of the responsibility of holding the city accountable for when the officers do wrong. That's mm-hmm. what makes it sting. If it stings, mm-hmm. then you're going to tell the city council is going to tell the chief, you need to change some of these policies or start enforcing them. And that's one of the problems that the report from the police reform experts brought out. Well, you talk a good talk, you put the policies in the book, but you don't enforce them.
Exactly.
Well, let me piggyback off that. When Councilman Netto said in a recent council meeting that, you know, Chief, I'm not impressed that you fired 4 officers in the last 2 weeks. It should have been 400. Again, how unsafe does that make the rest of us feel? But that said, you know, there's a lot of work that this police department has got to do. You can't keep not doing the right thing when these officers do what they do, but at the same time say we're not gonna fix it criminally, we're not gonna fix it civilly, and y'all just deal with it. That's like a boiling pot that's eventually gonna boil over. You can't keep doing that. If that makes sense.
It makes all the sense. But does it make dollars? That's the question.
But it's got to be corrected, though. You can't say you got 400. A city council person cannot tell the community that there are at least 400 bad officers on the force, and you don't get rid of them, but then they go out there and kill people, and then you say, oops, you know, they're covered because, you know, they had a uniform and a gun on at the time that they did it.
And they have qualified immunity. Yes, they do. Definitely. They do it all the time, especially here in Dallas.
Again, the councilman went on record and said we got at least 400 bad ones on the force. So you put it out there in the atmosphere. Now it's somebody's job to correct that. Okay, somebody's got some noise in the background. I'm not sure who that is. But you can't, a councilman cannot put that out there in the atmosphere and then leave it out there unfixed. And then something else happens, and then we're supposed to say, well, oops, it's just another mistake. No, you got to fix those mistakes. You guys are in leadership.
Right. They are supposed to fix them, but they're not.
Well, I don't know about that.
Everything you're saying is right. I mean, we know they're wrong. Everybody's know they're wrong. As far as they're concerned, it's not wrong. Then they're going to say, we get rid of these 400 cops, crime's going to go up. You know, they're going to make excuses for what they do. And they'll just keep dragging this dead cat down the street until they just have to. Right now, they don't feel like they have to.
Leon Reed, you agree with that as far as legally? Okay. Some kind of way, I think Leon muted himself. But I don't think so. I think absolutely. I don't know what we did with Leon's phone line. I don't know what happened with that. We're going to go to, but let me finish this point. I don't think you can do that, though, for smart, because there are smart attorneys out there, and they can very much pick up on something like that that was put out there by a council person when the next situation happens and say, you knew on such and such date you had 400 bad cops out there. This guy has a record of this, 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 and this. It has not been corrected. Now he's killed somebody, and you all had an opportunity to fix it, and you did. I'm just saying.
The police departments be held responsible, held accountable, and they get backed up by politicians and whomever else, even until the media starts bringing out more of what's going on, this can will be kicked down the road until doomsday if necessary. They don't care.
Leon,
that is
Leon,
always
is that right?
The problem.
Is that right legally?
I'm saying morally is where it's more wrong at.
When you say legally, clarify what you're saying and what you're asking for me, please.
Okay. Legally, if I were to take it to court and I say, on such and such day, Councilman Chris Nettles said in an open city council meeting that this department had at least 400 bad officers that still could be fired as well. So fast forward 2 months from now, one of these officers who's had a lot of, you know, infractions and hadn't been fired, kill someone, just like in a Tatiana Jefferson. Legally, it was already put out there that there was a problem. It did not get corrected. That officer then goes on to kill someone. And so legally, doesn't that make the city liable for the fact that they did not correct the problem when they knew it existed?
Right. What you're referring to is basically notice. You've been put on notice that something is wrong. You've been put on notice that there's water on that aisle and you didn't go mop it up. Somebody slipped on it. You can't say you didn't know. You were put on notice. And that's the value of filing complaints against the police officers and making those complaints written. Don't just call in. I don't care what the police department tells you. Always keep stuff in writing, because what's in writing goes in their records. And yes, when the city is put on notice that a particular cop is having a bunch of complaints coming in against him, well, then the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. Once that fire, you know, ignites in full blaze, you can't say that you did not know, you know, because you were put on notice and you should have acted by now. That is absolutely correct. But I do believe that Councilman Nettles
was
speaking with a degree of hyperbole.
Wait a minute, let him finish, Reggie. You said you think he was what?
I think he was speaking with a degree of hyperbole. You fired four, should have been 400. I think that was a degree of hyperbole. What he is saying is, while you fired four, there is still a substantial amount of cops who should not be cops. Now, I will tell you this. In my dealings and interviews with police chiefs as part of Walk for Reform and sitting down and discussing things legally, I've had police chiefs tell me, Leon, I keep trying to fire cops, but I got a bunch of zombie cops. And every time I try to get rid of them, they show up again because they go to arbitration, and the arbitrator tries to walk down the middle, and instead of firing them, the arbitrator reinstates them, and I have someone in my uniform that I don't necessarily want in my uniform because the arbitrator reinstated them, and that comes from the power of the unions. So unions are always an issue, and union interest often diverge from the city's interest. And so there are issues there. But yes, if a city or an entity or an individual is put on notice, if you put on notice that your animal is dangerous and your animal goes out, or you got a hole in your fence and your dangerous animal is escaping through it and you don't fix it and your dangerous animal goes out and bites up little Sally, you're in trouble. Because you had noticed that there was an issue. And the same goes with the city. That's why it's important for citizens, don't fight cops on the street. You know, fight them in writing. That's where the pen becomes mightier than the sword. Because what you put in their record book is going to be in their record book. Now his fourth and forevermore. And the DA's office keeps track of those officers, and they will put officers on a non-sponsor list saying, we don't believe this officer is credible, and so unless there's another officer involved in this case, we aren't going to, you know, necessarily prosecute what this officer turns in.
Mm. Adrian Smith, your phone line is open. You know what? Let me piggyback off that. I recently filed an IED report on an officer. He lied on three police reports. They found he didn't do anything wrong because they say he didn't break any city policy. That said, I filed an open records request to find out just how many complaints had been made against him, because I figured that they were finding him, you know, not guilty of anything in IED, but that didn't mean a lot of complaints were not made against them. Do you know what? They sent it to Ken Paxton's office. That's your attorney general in Texas. And he came back and upheld them not releasing the information. But it told me right there there's a problem with that officer. You see what I'm saying? Because I knew that just because IED didn't say that they found him guilty of anything, it didn't mean that there weren't countless complaints against officer, NPO officer Michael Chavez, number 4053. And so when I submitted the open records request, I was asking how many complaints has this officer had against him since he started, and they refused to release the information. FYI, y'all.
That goes to the union, because some departments fall under Chapter 143 of the local government code, and other ones fall under collective bargaining agreements. The DA's office, the Tarrant County DA's office, gets frustrated with the city of Fort Worth because personnel files are protected by the union, whereas in Dallas, you would have gotten that information. But in Tarrant, in Fort Worth, Fort Worth protects that information. And so what happens on the attorney side, the DA's office is required to give us exculpatory evidence. That means any evidence that can lead towards the innocence of our client. And if the DA's office isn't aware, because the police department is protecting records, that this cop is out doing some stuff that he or she has no business doing, our client gets convicted, then we find out after the fact that, you know, some stuff comes to light. Now we got to go back and redo a trial. The county is potentially looking at having to fork over some money for somebody being wrongfully convicted, all because the city of Fort Worth is hiding personnel records. And that's something that frustrates the DA, at least the outgoing one.
Oh, well, Gina Bivens helped to cover him up. So, Gina Bivens, when he killed somebody, that was going to be on you. Adrian Smith, your phone line is open.
Yeah. Okay, hey, y'all. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Carrie. Good evening, everyone. I think one of the biggest misconceptions that we have within society is that law enforcement cannot do no wrong. And that's the problem. One, first and foremost, the media plays a lot into that. And then not only that, it's just we've been conditioned to think that if you speak out against law enforcement, if you want to hold law enforcement to task, if you want to anything that got to do with law enforcement that's just to shine light on bad behavior, you got to be anti-law enforcement. So I say that to say this. He who controls the information controls the narrative. How do we take hold of the information? Because it's too many people walking around here all willy-nilly, like, as if law enforcement is not out of control. When I say law enforcement, because we have to put them all in the same bunch, because they're not holding each other accountable. This brotherhood, this sworn to secrecy, this, you know, whatever they sworn to, nobody is willing to go against the grain. And then I think the law enforcement officers who do go against the grain, they get a dose of what just everyday individuals get who possibly has spoken out against law enforcement or who has made a big stink about law enforcement. I think another thing you all have been touching on, the POA controls the department. I'm sorry. Chief Noakes is just there. He's just a body. The POA controls the department. Former Chief Joe Fisher, he didn't get fired by the POA pushed that. That was the POA's doing. Why didn't they come to, you know what I'm saying? Attorney, doesn't the POA represent all officers?
Right. It does.
No, but that's...
You're asking Leon Reed.
Yeah, I'm just asking attorney, Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed, does the POA represent all officers?
The chief and the senior staff, I don't know directly, because that would put basically an elected head of the POA in a position to be over the chief. And so the chief answers directly to the council. So I don't think the Police Officers Association covers the chief of police. I don't think he's allowed to be in the POA. So that's where you could have conflict between the POA and the chief of police. But the POA can, if the officers say, well, we're going to fold our arms and not, you know, not do, now you're having a problem with, so in a sense, you could have the head of the POA having more authority over the officers than the chief. The chief is going to set the policies and the guidelines, but if the head of the POA says, hey, fellas, we got to prove a point. Let's start slow poking calls and all of this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
They can affect statistics and crime by doing that and not being professional. Let's go slow to a call. Let's take longer. You know, even though we could have got there in 2 minutes, take 10. You know, because we want to show what it's like to have an officer come late. You know, things like that. You know, all we require and ask of officers is to be professional.
Mm.
Just be a professional police officer.
Right.
And if that's too much to ask of you, then go do something else.
we all know that the council is not outside. Like I said, we had to give acknowledgement to the ones who went on record and, you know, basically, because we know the mayor, she got security. She got whatever that comes with her position. But the other council members, they are willy-nilly. So the four council members who were willing to step out, you know, and take a vote against, you know, trying to bring some togetherness, you know, accountability, because what better way can you make something better unless you get with the people who know what's going on? And the people who know what's going on are the people in the community. So I would want, if I was on law enforcement, I would like, yes, I would need y'all involvement so we can know what's going on. Not so much so we could arrest more people and this, that, and other, but what can we do to implement, you know, to try to make, you know, quote-unquote changes? And I'll say this last point. That place of emotion, I see I lost my train of thought when I went there Tuesday. That place of emotion Maddie Parker went to, that old place of emotion she went to when she made that little statement and about if Miss Tatiana Jefferson would have lived in her community, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. You know, they won't get no Academy Award. She won't be receiving no Academy Award for that. They don't give even nominations for that type of performance. But she went to that place of emotion. Then, you know, she just easily segued into, but it's my, we got to get out of it because it's my birthday tomorrow. I said it to say this. She's out of touch. She's out of touch. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. It's more or less about the position. It's more or less about trying to make whoever put her in position happy. You all, I don't know, Carrie. You know, I've been asking the question. Do y'all think the unrest is waiting to boil over? I mean, you know, it's been quiet, but what's y'all observation of everything right now that's going on leading into this trial? It's quite too quiet for me, you know?
Well, the earlier caller said that there was going to be problems. I think Mr. Vincent Gillis said there was going to be problems if they moved and some other stuff. So, yeah, I guess so.
Well, if y'all bring a problem, just for once, can y'all not bring it to your own? Can we not bring it to our own communities? It's just, we're going to direct that. If y'all going to all the people listening who are going to be a part of that unrest, you know, whatever it is, I'm not knocking you. But, hey, please take that to the center of Fort Worth. Please take it to the center of Fort Worth because our communities are already dealing with enough. You know what I'm saying? But we in for one, y'all. And then, like I said, even if they move the trial, y'all, the national media is going to – they're already on top of it. The longer y'all delay, the more people y'all gonna make want to see what is this all about. Google, all you got to do is type in a name, and people want to – I don't think it's nobody who doesn't know about this situation. Only way you're not going to know about this situation, take it. You're going to have this trial in the Amish community. You know, the Amish don't watch TV. The Amish don't partake in nothing worldly. So the only way they're going to have a trial that nobody knows about the injustice that happened to Mr. Tatiana Jefferson is continuing to go on is you got to put them in the Amish community. Take it to the Amish community. I'm sorry. But
wow,
that's all I had to say. I'm like you all. I want to see how things want how things are going to go forward. I'm gonna try not to, when I go to counseling, try not to too much talk about the whatever going on with the trial. You know, just focus on trying to keep them yahoos accountable. You know what I'm saying? Because we got enough dealing with them.
Absolutely.
And I say one more thing. Lawsuits. How many more Jackie Craigs are out there? How many more Jackie Craigs are out there? We got to push lawsuits.
Hundreds of them are out there. Are they going to ever get to court? That's the problem.
Yes, sir. Gotcha. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got to push for lawsuits. You got to hit the city. Got to hit them in the pocketbook. That's all I have, Carrie.
Well, listen, you know, I'm going to leave your phone line open. Listen, you know, question, if Aaron Dean had been a black officer and Tatiana Jefferson had been a white woman, would we be just going to trial? Would we be looking at a change of venue? Would we have seen all of this special treatment?
Let's just say he would already have had a few dances with the welcoming committee at the prison by this time. Mm. So that wouldn't have been. Like I said, Goldmouth already took his cornbread. So we wouldn't be having this problem. Race plays that big of a factor in these type of cases. That's just like if Bolton John was a Dallas police officer, you think he could have went in Amber Geiger's apartment and shot her and then hollered out, "I thought this was not my place. I didn't know."
No.
That ain't going to work.
No,
that dirty
won't
fly.
In the dirty part of
how that worked out in Minnesota,
yes,
when the black officer shot the white Australian lady, they prosecuted him and convicted him quickly.
Mm. Yes, sir. They did. And they gave a family a big settlement.
Oh, yeah, they got a nice settlement. They got a nice fat settlement.
They didn't give her a Jackie Craig settlement. They gave her a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire type settlement. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
They cut a big check.
And let me ask this. You know, we saw how Judge Hagerman was recused on this particular case. I'm not sure he didn't want to be recused, if the truth be told. But let's just say he didn't. Would this have typically happened if this were not a situation of Aaron Dean with this high power, you know, defense team? I don't think that they would have gotten rid of him. I don't think we'd be looking at a new judge. I don't believe that. Am I wrong?
The biggest problem is always going to be this problem. You're looking at a case where the cop is usually not the defendant. The cop is usually usually on the prosecuting side. He's the witness for the prosecution. Very seldom that is 0.1% of criminal cases where the police officer is actually on trial for murder or for whatever crime. That's the problem.
I agree.
Hey, you mentioned Bolton John. Didn't they try to dirty up his reputation?
They did.
Right.
They brought up a lot of things, but they were so meaningless. Whatever they brought up, it was just that pointless and meaningless. It doesn't change the fact he got murdered in his own house for nothing.
And I'm one who said that the young brother that testified, I'm sorry, y'all, and I'm not sorry, but he wasn't killed by nobody that looked like him. That was a police hit. I'm sorry. I don't care what they said about some cats coming from out of town. They try to make it as a drug thing. Nah. That was a law enforcement hit. Right. That was a law enforcement hit. I'm sorry.
Miles for some weed. I'm just going to always go back to that. I don't care how good the weed was. Not to mention, you're going to say Joshua Brown was a known drug dealer, but he's your star witness in a murder trial against a cop. Can you, somebody, please wake me up and tell me that I'm dreaming this all?
Wow. Yo, let me ask a question first, though, because we want to get back to subject, y'all, because we got just a few minutes left in the show. Let me ask about this Judge Patrick Gallagher. What I understand about him is he was appointed to the bench by Governor Abbott in July of 2020. I understand that Gallagher worked as an attorney in private practice, initially specializing in insurance, commercial, and personal injury litigation. He also served as assistant district attorney for Dallas County. Besides that, Leon Reed, what do we know about this judge?
Judge Gallagher, his name is George. Judge Gallagher's been on the bench at least since I started practicing law 18 years ago. So this 2020 appointment, that's not Judge George Gallagher.
Okay, J. Patrick Gallagher. That is not the right one. I'm sorry. Okay, so this person, tell us about the Gallagher you know. I apologize now for the misinformation. Tell us about this judge.
George Gallagher, like I said, he's been a judge since I started practicing law, and I started practicing law in 2004. He was the lawyer that was going to be prosecuting Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton's case was in his court, Judge Gallagher is used to high-profile cases. Judge Gallagher almost got into some trouble because there was the thing that got him in the news was when an inmate had on a shock belt or something and had a trial, and Judge Gallagher was accused of telling the bailiff, you know, because you saw how that guy who was up in Wisconsin that just got 1,000 years, the one that ran over the people and stuff.
Well, ran over everybody at the parade.
That represented himself and just did the fool every day. So Judge Gallagher apparently had somebody like that in his court, and he was accused of telling the bailiffs to shock him, you know, with a shock belt. But I think those charges, those allegations were deemed unfounded. But as a person, I like Judge Gallagher as a person. I've been in his chambers when he's been looking up the law on some stuff, and, you know, and he's asked my opinion on stuff. Leon, tell me what you think about this. When it comes to paying defense attorneys who are appointed on cases, Judge Gallagher's always paid the defense attorneys well. Judge Gallagher is really, you know, as a defense attorney, if you were going to have a case with a difficult technical issue or something and you wanted somebody who wouldn't be afraid to give you a fair shake, you know, you would go to Judge Gallagher. That's me.
Well, okay, let me ask this then. So seeing that Hagerman had it first and now Gallagher, which do you believe would be the better judge on this particular case? For this trial,
Judge Gallagher again. Now, Judge Hagerman became a judge in 2014. He didn't get sworn in until January 2015 because he and I were out in the rain together and cold, in 2014 when we both ran, you know, and I knew him then when he was the chief of a court. He got elected, of course. I came in second place, different courts. But I've been knowing Judge Hagerman, so he's been a practicing criminal defense, well, not prosecutor, for like 25 years. He's been a judge for like the past 8. His most recent high-profile case involving a cop was John Romer, who got convicted of punching Henry. I forgot Henry's last name while he was waiting at Harris Hospital to get a ride home. And the cop told him to leave when he had a hospital bracelet on and everything, and then the cop punched him and arrested him for resisting arrest, and the cop lied in his grand jury documentation, actually got convicted, but that was, and Judge Hagerman ended up, I think, sentencing him to 5 years for lying to the grand jury.
Romer was in whose court, Hagerman or Gallagher?
Hagerman.
Okay, because Romer's not in jail, even though the DA's office led us to believe that he was off to jail. He never went.
He's on an appeal bond. He's filed an appeal. And while his case is pending, the POA put up enough money to cover his appeal bond.
Wow. Interesting.
Best criminal justice system money can buy.
Seriously. You can't make this stuff up, y'all. I mean, you just can't make this up.
You can't.
Okay, listen.
Can't even try.
You can't make this up. Okay, what we played at the beginning of the show, even though Pastor Alcee Chris talked straight through it, we're gonna play it one more time because we wanna know what was the non-emergency call that Mr. James made, what was said, and then we wanna think about what kind of mindset was Aaron Dean in when he went there. So if everybody would get quiet for a second, I'm going to play that call. And let's just think about as we listen to this, when Aaron Dean and his partner listened to this call, what was it about that call that made them think they needed to park around the corner and tiptoe into the backyard? Well, we're going to listen to the call, and you all decide.
Fort Worth Police Operator, inmate 73, what's the address?
I'm calling about my neighbor.
Okay, what's the address?
1203 East Allen Avenue.
Okay, 1203 East Allen Avenue. What's going on there?
Well, the front doors have been open since 10 o'clock, and I haven't seen anybody moving around. It's not normal for them to have both of the doors open this time of night.
Okay, you know if anyone is inside?
No, I'm not sure. Both of the calls are there.
Here with me. And they're in the driveway?
Almost the cars in the driveway, yes.
Okay. Can you give me a description, like a color of the vehicles?
Well, one's white and one's dark blue.
The white one is a sedan or a SUV? Or pickup?
They're both sedans.
Okay. And what's your name?
James Smith.
And what's your telephone number? 817. Gotcha. And are they usually home at this time?
They're usually home, but they never had both of the front doors open.
Okay.
With the lights on, like I can see straight through the house. When my sister woke me up, she stays across the street from them. I live on the opposite side of my sister.
Wow, okay. And the address that you gave me, 1203, that's their address, correct?
Yes.
Okay. We'll have an officer come by. They're already being dispatched now, okay?
Okay, appreciate it. I mean, it's just not normal for them to have both the doors open this late that long.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, y'all heard the call. I don't see where I would have heightened that or escalated that to a robbery in progress or, you know, something really bad is going on. I just don't hear that. Do you all see what I'm talking about? What kind of mindset must Aaron Dean or his partner have been in to take that and escalate it to maybe a crime in progress?
Hey,
I guess it goes back to that adventurous mind that Aaron Dean has, and he just made it like it was some episode of Chicago PD or something and took it to the extreme he took it to.
And that would have been my exact words. It was an adventure to him. I don't know if we could do because I know the media, you know, when they did the what was that they did months back, Harry, when you first tried to get me involved with the, you know, going down there. I stated his police interviewing tells the story about Aaron Dean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they let that fly, but if we able to get a hold of that police interviewing session, which I think the Star Telegram was able to, I think you can get it. I don't know if you can get it to Mr. Attorney. I don't know if we can that be obtained through open records.
It's already out. That's where he had mentioned that he was, you know, why did you want to join a department, you know,
yes, sir.
For the adventure?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All
yes,
of
sir.
That was, that's where he said that. So that is available. You just, and it hasn't been scrubbed from the internet. You just, if you use the right search terms, you will find it.
Yes, wow. sir. And sitting there watching it when I was able to sit in the courtroom and watch it, I kid y'all not, my mind went right to the police department. The police department is at fault, and this man's mind was on. It wasn't no law enforcement. It was on something else.
Well, I'm gonna tell you another thing that they had brought up for the reason for him going in the backyard, because allegedly he claimed that he didn't want to go through the front door because he didn't want to end up like Amber Geiger. Now, now that's something that I had heard about. So, because the consensus to the tidy whiteys on the other side of town is the fact that Geiger was doing a job, she was tired, she was overworked and overstressed, she went into a tense situation and got blamed for murder. So that boo-hoo-hoo is what they've been flying around for the past 4 years now.
I guess I'm not following. How is going in the backyard going to prevent him from being like an Amber Geiger? I guess I don't understand how that goes together.
Because he feel like if he went through the front door and he shot and killed somebody, he'd get blamed just like that. Either way it goes, I mean, to try and explain the unexplainable, I mean, that's the idiocy that he had, that they try to run on. Because there's always a comparison to trying that Fort Worth going to do things different from what Dallas does and vice versa. So that's part of the consensus they're trying to have. Just like they're trying to have now, that they're going to handle this case better than what Dallas did with Amber Geiger. So that's the reason why I feel that the fix is already in.
Well, the last component of this that really bothers me is Erin Dean had a partner with him that night. They have never mentioned her name in the media. They never said what her role was. They never said where she was in the whole scheme of things. And so I'm trying to understand.
That's not
should
true.
We see,
they rode in separate cars.
They rode in separate cars.
Dean was by himself. She was by herself. Dean was by himself. They met. That's the reason why they had both cars parked apart, from, you know, away from each other like they were.
I don't know that I've heard that before.
My question is, Carrie, because it's like minds. I guess like minds, you know, they say like minds think alike. I was about to mention that. I wanted to know what was that conversation, because what was the conversation between them two? I'm going to just say this. As a man, not only I feel like he wanted to lead out and he wanted to show her, just the men. You know, I think the men on her could say at least once in their life they've tried to show out for a woman. I know I've done things try to show out for a woman. So, but the thing is, I would like to know what was that conversation. Because I'm sure that the lady, women do think different, and I'm sure that wouldn't have been her approach.
What you will likely hear, again, this is stuff that likely has not been made public yet, but on those little computers that they have, they send messages back and forth to each other, so I would anticipate that you would see the messages that were sent back and forth, those messages. Would certainly answer that question. You know, oh, here we go again, another call in the hood or something. You just never know. And the radio chatter is also recorded. And so the radio chatter between the officers, you know, all of that is not public information because it's a pending trial, but it's all going to come out. And that may be how the DA's office establishes its case and its mindset.
Okay, what I'm being told is they did ride in separate cars. They parked around the corner, but they walked over there side by side. Those are facts. So they went in separate cars, but they walked over there side by side. So they probably followed each other more than likely to where they were going to park around the corner, and then they walked up to the house together. So again, who is the other officer, his partner that night? What role did she play? Who is she? All of that. And where was she at when it all happened? So why has the city protected that person is a million-dollar question. Never once have we ever heard who she was.
Because
she may still be a cop when it comes to trial. And she may be a cop. She may not be. You know, and she is a witness, and depending on how long it takes to go to trial, and we've seen how long it's taken for this stuff to go to trial, she still, you know, has to work. So, you know, and quite frankly, she might say, shoot, I ain't had nothing to do with it. My name Bennett. I ain't in it. I ain't telling him to shoot her. You know, so she may not want to be associated with him. You know,
I understand they both went in the backyard, and they both viewed a Tatiana Jefferson through the window. He just took the shot.
If that's the case, then he would have some explaining to do, because whenever those situations where one cop draws and shoots and the other one doesn't, it always raises questions. You know, so they didn't feel the need. Why did you?
Which is exactly the situation with the video that you sent me. One guy took the shot. The other person looked like she was traumatized. Like, oh, my God, he just shot the person.
Right.
Remember
that's what happened in David Colley's situation. And if you remember my brother who got killed in Tulsa, when the female cop shot him and the male cop standing next to her never even pulled his weapon.
See?
If you recall what I'm talking about, the brother who was, pardon?
No, I was just saying, that was the same thing that happened to the young man in Minnesota when he was reaching for his license, and the guy shot him. His name slipped in my mind. It'll come to me in a moment. But they were saying that he had a backup cop on the other side of the car that never drew his weapon. So he was kind of surprised, like, why all of a sudden he just grabbed his weapon when he shot Philando Castile. That's what I'm talking about. When Philando Castile got killed, the same situation. Two cops was there. The backup cop never said gun or anything.
But I think Webster needs to redefine "I fear for my life." That needs to be a formal definition. That's across the board, that we all understand what that means when someone says, "I fear for my life." So, because obviously some of us look at or see fear for my life one way, and somebody standing right next to them sees something totally different.
That's never going to be a good possible legal argument. You have some people that are afraid of or dogs or something, and so you're going to pull out your gun and shoot a dog or a cat because you're afraid of them because you're a cop. You know,
hey.
I mean, that's happened before too.
Hey, I'll say this with that, Kerry. I'll say this, and I always say this, so people can stop canoodling in law enforcement. They take an oath. They know what they're signing up for. They know that death is a possibility. Why do I say that? Because when I enlisted in the military, I took an oath. I knew that death was a possibility. I knew that war was a possibility. So when I took that oath, I was taking a chance on possibility of not coming home, possibility getting involved in the conflict, possibility this, that, or the other. They take an oath. Death is a part of death. Is danger comes with that occupation. You know what I'm saying? Any occupation, but with that occupation, quote unquote, in the space that it is in society, death is a part of the. Why you not training for? They're having death situations, possible death situations. This happened. How do you react? Woo, 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 woo. So I get you, Kerry. I get you what about us? I pray for my life. So if I say I pray for my life and I just see a law enforcement, oh, and I shoot, oh, I pray for my life. He just walked up to my car. I didn't know who he was. He didn't identify. We've heard a situation like that. People say they didn't identify themselves. It was a law enforcement undercover. Like, he didn't identify. I shot him. I didn't know who he was. You know,
well, that's
they
like the kid got shot 6 weeks ago in San Antonio. I mean, he was eating a hamburger. The cop pulls
wow.
up and said, "What's up?" And then the guy speeds off, and the cop shoots him. And he just woke out of his coma a few days ago.
But there needs to be a formal definition for that. Because if I can walk the street and encounter all types of people all day long, and I don't
right.
instantly feel that I'm in fear for my life just because somebody acts differently than I, you know, may act, then how is it that these people can see somebody standing in a window and unarmed and then instantly, you know, shoot her within seconds just because she's peeping out of the window? Where is the perceived threat? We really need to understand the true definition to an officer of what does perceived threat mean to you and what does fear for your life mean to you. I mean, is someone coming at you? Because in some instances, we see people running from the officer and they say they fear for their lives and they shoot them in the back. So we really need to understand what that word means to. Every officer needs to be able to do a written essay on what does perceived threat mean to you and what does fear for your life mean to you. So we'll understand before we hire you, you know, what your definition of those things are, so we'll know if you are police material or not.
Well, I'm certain that question is being asked right now, and it's probably been asked more than once in this case.
All right, y'all. I'm just saying. All right, y'all, final comments, because you know what? And if this show makes its way to the courtroom this week, you know what? Frankly, I don't give a damn. And when I say that, I don't mean that in terms of I don't care if it goes out of or gets the case taken out of here into another venue, because I think that is, in my opinion, bullshit. And I think anytime the Star Telegram and anybody else, what's his name, Leon, what's the guy's name? I forgot his name, but he has a white guy who has a talk show here. He's talked about it. All the other news outlets have talked about it. So you cannot gag order certain people and other people be allowed to talk about it. So as far as I'm concerned, even if y'all find a million reasons to say you're changing the venue, it's still all bullshit. Because everybody,
you saw they jacked up on, they all piled up on Lee Merritt talking about, you know, about what he said. And I'm like, well, he's the attorney for the victim. So, I mean, he has a right to have an opinion about the case.
Yeah. I mean, you can't tell the whole city, we can't talk about it, because if we do, you're going to put us all under the threat of taking it out of the city. I'm sorry, that's all bullshit. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Hey, Kerry, real quick.
Okay.
I just say this. Quick kicking this justice, this delay of justice down the road. Quick kicking it down the road. Let's go on and have a trial, get this trial over, and then we'll stop talking about it. We're not going to forget about Ms. Tatiana Dresser. We're not going to. Don't let me disparage the situation. We're not going to forget her. We're not going to forget the situation. We're not going to forget the impact it's had on this community, this city, this, that, or the other. But if you go ahead and have this trial, we'll stop talking about it.
That part.
Well, apparently, y'all want us talking about it. Thank you, Kerry.
Absolutely. And, y'all, we got to get out of here tonight. We want to say thank you to Elsie Chris, Attorney Leon Reed, Reggie Ruffin with Just Cause, and Adrian Smith and Benson Gillis for chiming in tonight. Also, listen, consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Send me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. We'll work with your budget. Consider supporting the show. We love to bring you great content every week. And we understand that Amber Carr is in the hospital again, and we don't know the circumstances, but we're praying for her. And Pastor Elsie Christian, you ain't said nothing the whole show. Do you mind praying us out of here? Do you mind praying for the family, for the neighbor, Mr. James, praying for the community, and praying that justice prevail in this particular case? Pastor Chris?
Amen.
Pastor Chris? Okay, we didn't lost Chris. Y'all listen, let me do it then. Because I think it absolutely needs to be said. God, we ask tonight that we lift up the family. Amber Carr, whatever her situation is, God, you know, you see. We ask that you touch her body, heal her body, strengthen her body to endure whatever the situation may be in terms of the outcome of this trial. We ask that you look on little Zion, the 8-year-old that was there who's now 11 now, who will be forever traumatized. But, God, we ask that he not look like what he's been through. We ask that you lift up Mr. James tonight. We ask, God, that you encourage his heart for this journey. May he not relive this nightmare every day. We ask that you give him peace that surpasses all understanding. Lord, we lift up this city tonight. We're asking that justice prevail. May right overshadow wrong. And we also ask that you expose, reveal, and uncover the truth, that all men may know what really happened. And we ask that you bring unity to this city, as it seems in many ways to be divided, the people, one group against another. And God, we ask that you intervene and bring justice to all. With that, we say tonight we're going to end, and we're praying that all goes well in this particular trial, and we're just asking for justice for Tatiana Jefferson. So until next week, good night.
Good night. Amen.
Good night.
Amen.